This is Henry Banks. Coming up on People of Color today, my guest, Haji Dokanchi, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin Superior, discusses refugees and tells us what a refugee is and offers ways to get involved in making change in our society. Also on the show, what is your life's blueprint? A speech by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. from October 26, 1967 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Join us on People of Color with Henry Banks on Wisconsin Public Radio after this news. Welcome to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. I'm here today with Haji Dokanchi. He is a political science professor at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. And we are here today. We're going to be talking about refugees in our society and what's going on in our country, in the United States, and how some recent actions by our administration in Washington, D.C., and what those actions have done to very important people in our country. And I just want to welcome you and thank you for taking the time to come and talk about this very important topic.
Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure. Thank
Absolutely. You. So is there anything else you would like for our listeners to know about you, what you do in the community, in addition to being a professor at the university?
Well, I teach political science, and over the course of the years, one of the things that we have done is to use exhibits as a way of having our students teach both the community, university community, and the community at large. So over the span of last 10 years or so, we started with landmine awareness exhibits. So the idea was to teach people what are landmines, how do they work, and what's wrong with them. And and so the students were actually doing learning about this and teaching that to the community members. And then over time, we shifted into the refugee question. And so for the last 3 or 4 years, we have done more on refugees, what are refugees, who the refugees are. And our job is not to say whether you have to like them or not like them, but there is a lot of misperceptions and misconceptions about what refugees are and what our legal obligations are and what we can do about this. So we designed this particular exhibit part, is especially since like last 2 years, we shifted more towards the Syrian crisis. So we have a exhibit that takes the audience step by step from Syria all the way to Sweden. And so at each step, there are a number of choices that you have to make. So we talk to the audience members about the choices that are being made. And what's nice about this is that it also offers our students an ability to do research on particular topics. For example, how much food is there for a refugee who's leaving, let's say, Syria and is in the Jordanian border. How do you feed these people? What's the security at the camps? How are these camps maintained? You know, how many bathrooms are there per, let's say, 100 people? How many, you know, kitchens are there? How many hospitals? Some people look at, for example, domestic policies regarding who can become a citizen and who can't. So, for example, each country would have its own standards as to how they allow people to come in and whether they allow them to stay in and for how long, what kind of benefits you get. So, for example, over the course of the years, I have had students from Sweden who have done research and presentations on what happens if you're a refugee and you end up in Sweden. What kind of programs are there? What kind of benefits are there? And at the same time, we also have, and usually somebody work on the U.S., just to show them comparisons in terms of what is being offered elsewhere and what's offered in the United States.
So quite busy as far as the exhibit is concerned. So when you lay this out as it relates to the United States and then refugees coming here, you talked about you talked to students about Sweden, and they did their research, and then the United States, and you showed the difference. What are some of the differences
between those two countries? Well, there are substantial differences. For one thing, at least, for one thing, you have two different streams. So, for example, when you talk about Europe, you have stream coming from Middle East, particularly from Syria, and you have another stream coming from Sub-Saharan Africa, moving north towards Libya to and Morocco, either to Italy or Spain, respectively. So their stream is, in terms of inflow of refugees, happens to be different. Ours right now tends to be, for example, what's called the Triangle, which is in Central America, which has a high degree of violence, mm-hmm. Which is forcing people out. So we have a different avenue of migration. So what we did was, we are not trying to teach people only about the Syrian refugees, but the idea is that by focusing on one route, mm-hmm. we can just show people what are the choices. You know, does, for example, every Syrian citizen leave the country? And the answer is no. So we just want to make sure people understand that there are people who are still living in Syria. There are areas that are still safe, and there are areas that people reside. Mm-hmm. There are also areas that are war. And so the idea is, what would compel you to move? So we have written like six choices for each country, and we have a dice. So mm-hmm. you roll the dice. So it could be very much like you could have 10 people come through this particular exhibit. The dice determines what you do. So somebody may, for example, get caught the first day trying to sneak out of this, you know, war zone into a safe zone, and get abducted into either the military for the Syrian government or the opposition party, mm-hmm. and die. Or somebody may be told that, you know what, you're okay, stay put, there is no need for you to move. There are other options that will have you move. So the idea is to teach people why people move. You know, it's kind of interesting. I just saw something in the Facebook yesterday, somebody saying that the problem with refugees is that they're just not willing to fight. Mm-hmm. And what you really have to understand is that these are civilians. They are not military personnel. So you're dealing with people who are, you know, if war came to my home front tomorrow, I am not a military person. Mm-hmm. So I will pick up my stuff and move. So we need to teach people what are the conditions that encourage people to move, or not necessarily encourage, that's a nice thing. What are conditions that force people to move? So yes. These are not necessarily questions of convenience. And in this manner, what we do is we teach people, for example, what's the Convention of Refugees, which the U.S. is a party to, mm-hmm. and what is the legal definition of a refugee?
Why don't you talk about that?
All right. Well, in order to be a refugee, you have to have a well-founded fear of persecution based on ethnicity, religion, mm-hmm. you know, political opinion, or social groups. So the idea here is that and there are different ways. For example, I could fly to the United States and then get to New York City and say I'm a political refugee. I would like to seek asylum. So mm-hmm. at that point, I will be categorized as an asylum seeker. But most often what happens is that people leave their countries and they go, for example, to Jordan or to neighboring countries around Syria. Now, from there, at least the way the American system works is that usually U.S. government goes to those areas and interviews people. And there they determine if you are a refugee. So you have to document what's the basis for persecution. And you have to show evidence that this persecution is real. And if they think this is okay, then they will give you a refugee status, and then you can come to the United States. Mm-hmm. And if you have a chance, I would suggest 60 Minutes last night did a wonderful program on this particular phase, which is just how Americans are in refugee camps, or at least were. The program was suspended as of Friday. They were in a refugee camp in Jordan, and they would actually interview refugees. And this process, by the way, takes about 2 years. So mm-hmm. anything mm-hmm. from 18 months to 2 years. So right. They have to be this idea of extreme vetting, with all due respect, is not new. These people have gone gone through enormous vetting. So it's, whether it is FBI, whether it's National Department of Homeland Security, State Department, they all go through these particular individuals and check them out. And then
it's after not easy. It is absolutely not easy to come here.
If one of my students was actually extremely angry at me because I said, you know, if you do want to harm the United States, you don't have to become a refugee because it takes 2 years. All you have to do is go get a visa to come visit the United States and go to Disney World.
Yes.
And probably there is less paperwork involved in that and background check involved in that as opposed to what the refugees go through.
Absolutely. And I know that just recently the Trump administration had issued an order based on seven countries. One of those countries was Syria. You might want to talk briefly about the others if you want to take time to do that. But none of those countries have done harm to America on American soil at any time.
And I would,
none of them.
And that's an accurate statement. I would also say that, for example, I wouldn't say these countries have not done harm. Let's go after countries that have done harm.
Absolutely.
Because a refugee is a refugee irrespective of which country they come from.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do is, and again, this is also another issue that we deal with at the exhibit, which is to say, how do you reconcile the issues of refugees with national security?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's asking for America to take terrorists. And this is where the vetting comes in. So the question is, how do we design a system that is accurate and is as good as it gets, that can guarantee people to come here and live safely, and also can guarantee American safety? And I think this is, if you look at this, number of terrorists who have done terrorism in the United States, number of refugees who have done terrorism in the United States, zero.
Zero.
So that's a very good thing to say that the system works. So we don't need to reinvent this. What we need to do is make sure that it works.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I know that we're here, we're having a very candid conversation. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk more about domestic terrorism and kind of address that a bit in our conversation. I'm here with Haji Dokanchi, and we are talking about refugees and the impact of refugees in our country and beyond. This is People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Again, I'm here with Haji Dokanchi. He is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. Before we went to break, you know, we started talking about terrorism and what terrorism is doing in this country. And I want to make sure our listeners know this, that white men in the United States have been responsible for 64% of mass shootings in the United States since 1982, and that is according to Mother Jones magazine. So that's 64% of mass shootings in this country since 1982. That's a significant number. That's a very significant statistic. Had you ever heard that before?
No.
And so, you know, we have people like Dylann Roof, who murdered those folks in the South, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, just to name a few, all are domestic terrorists. And they're right here on our own soil. And so then all of a sudden our president closes out seven countries who have done nothing on our soil to harm Americans. And that, to me, is disconcerting. It says that this individual, in my opinion, is more interested in bringing on fear as opposed to bringing us together as a society and as a world. So we were talking about this. I wanted to say to our listeners, too, that I think that if we deal with refugees in a way that we've dealt with refugees for as long as I know, the chances of refugees coming to our country to do us any harm, it just isn't there. It just isn't there.
And historically, I think this is also the other part. If you look at, for example, migration patterns as well as refugee flows into the United States, there have been a number of different really racist undertones. And again, one when you use that term would associate racism in terms of color. Mm-hmm. But for example, if you look at the statements that were made about the Irish, about 100 years ago, 110 years ago, it was extremely racist. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that the Irish were somehow inferior as human beings to the rest of the Americans, and somehow they need to be kept at bay. Mm-hmm. The idea that, for example, migrants, a couple of years ago, there was an Ebola outbreak, and all of a sudden there was a panic that somehow if we allow people come from certain parts of Africa, then the whole country will be affected by Ebola, and some of the people were acting, went into this steroid kind of response of saying that, we don't want to allow anybody from these regions or these countries to come here. And I think this also shows how good policy works. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of health, in case of fighting Ebola, in terms of also refugees and terrorism, these are policy issues. And I think we need to focus on what kind of policies. And people can disagree with me. That's perfectly fine. I am more interested in what kind of evidence do you have to support this. And so once in a while, the discussion gets diluted. Mm-hmm. So people try to tell you commonsensical things. Like, there are three poisonous Skittles, would you eat it? And this is not the question. The question is, do I eat Skittles? And the answer is yes. I love Skittles, and I will continue to eat it because I trust the company. Now, could the company accidentally poison this, and will I die? Yes. But until I am alive, I think I will enjoy a bag of Skittles because I do trust that the company has measures in place that minimizes that. Mm-hmm. Life is about choices. The same thing with refugees. What can we do to make sure that those who come here are well-intentioned and don't have any intent on destroying us or affecting us? I think if we put the right policy in, we can allow them in here and use and have a nice compromise between our sense of security as well as our moral obligation to as well as legal obligation to other people.
And America has always been a land of opportunity. A land of welcoming people from all over. We are a land of people who have made America what it is, despite the odds. And so for all of a sudden, the doors to be closed on refugee children and women who are fleeing locations around the world for the safety of their families, they should be allowed to come to our country, again, because we are a land of opportunity for all. And for me, it's about the humanness of that and the importance of welcoming people. And if you look at the Statue of Liberty, that's what it was initially put there for, because it was to welcome all people. And so if you were to give any suggestions on what we can do right now with regard to refugees, what would that be?
What I would say is that learn more about them. And I think, as I said, there's a lot of misconceptions about them. Find out what they are. If you look at your own community, and by the way, both in Minnesota and Wisconsin, we have a healthy refugee population of both Hmong and Somali population.
That's right.
And I use this in my class. Both communities have contributed enormously to the economies of Wisconsin and the economies of Minnesota. They are a wonderful population, is a great source of diversity, and there is nothing to suggest that Syrians or other refugees in the future cannot be similarly adapted to American political landscape and social landscape and contribute to the well-being of our communities.
Mm-hmm. So if there was, right now in Wisconsin, where we're located on the University of Wisconsin campus in Superior, how can students get involved?
Well, there are, at least on an individual level, and let me go back to your question, the past question. You can call your members of Congress and as well as elected officials and tell them what you think about this position and also make sure that your voice is heard. Mm-hmm. You can also try to contact us if you have a church, a civil organization, or a business, and you have people who you want to teach, to learn about this particular topic, please feel free to contact me, and I will be more than happy to get our group to come in and do a workshop for you so you can learn more about this.
Mm-hmm. So, in your opinion, do you believe as Americans we will we'll get this right as it relates to refugees? Because we're the wealthiest country on the face of the earth. Yet in this country, some will say there are a lot of Americans who are struggling. There are a lot of American children who aren't getting fed. What would you say to somebody if they said something like that to you?
The question is not, do I feed an American versus do I feed somebody else? The question is, how do we feed both?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If, the person, for example, who found the Chobani yogurt, I believe he is a multimillionaire now. He actually has a business in upstate New York and hires a lot of Americans. So this is not a question of take one and give it to the other one. Mm-hmm. I think we need to think more in terms of positive sum game, where the members who are coming in are not trying to, they're not coming here for welfare. For one thing, if you look at the benefits, they're very restricted and very limited in terms of time. And they're always encouraged to learn language, assimilate, and work hard. So they're coming with the very strict rules about how they can come into this community and to the United States. So I think that there is no trade-off here. I think if any one of them succeeds, they can have a hand up for somebody else and work together and help their own communities.
Now, I know of this past Monday and Tuesday, you had a campaign going on over in the Yellow Jacket Union. Mm-hmm. Are you planning to continue that campaign? Or I know you had quite a few people that came and participated in that. Are you going to continue that?
I will try to continue. It just depends on my commitments in terms of time and also other factors. But if anybody wants to come to my office, come by my office. I will be more than happy to take your picture and post it. And let me also say this, despite the policy, one of the things that's also very interesting, and this isn't going before election, we had the refugee exhibit at UWS in November, and people came in. There is a genuine interest in this, and what's interesting is that once people learn what makes a refugee, almost all of them say, oh my God, I didn't know this was the case.
Mm-hmm.
So is more of a question of not knowing what it is. So, if I ask most Americans today, would you allow somebody who is fleeing Cuba under, Cuba under Castro and wants to come to the United States, would you let them come to the United States? They would say yes. And that's a legal definition and a classical case of a refugee.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are, and most people are very sensitive and generous in that respect, and I think it's just a matter of highlighting those particular things.
Absolutely. Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
We are going to have the refugee exhibit at UW campus on April 11 and 12th from 9 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock in the evening. Please join us. The more, the merrier. And it would also be a good challenge for my students because they have to actually practice what they learn. And this would be a great opportunity for people to learn more about this issue.
And where's that going to be at?
This will be at YU Great Room A.
Okay.
At the campus of UW Superior.
Absolutely. And I'll make sure that we get that information out as it gets closer to that exhibit. And I'm looking forward to that. I want to take this time to thank you, Professor Haji, for being on People of Color today. We have a lot of work to do to make our society a society for all. It doesn't matter where you come from. We are all human beings. And I again want to thank you and appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today. This is People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. Once again, I want to take this time to thank Professor Haji Dokanchi for taking the time to be with us on People of Color today. If anyone is interested in having him or his group come in and teach you about refugees and the exhibit that's coming up, the number to call is 218-348-7896, 218-348-7896, or you can email him directly at kdokhanc@uwsuper.edu. And I have a couple of announcements that are real important. There's a welcome event coming up on February 8th. That's Wednesday, February 8th. Jarrell Benton is the new director of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. The welcome event starts at 3 p.m. and goes until 4:30 p.m. in the Multicultural Center in Old Main 232. And that event is hosted by the Office of Multicultural Affairs at UWS. Jarrell Benton is the new director of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion on the campus. Also, there is a petition for protection of immigrant international students, and that will be going around the campus. And you are certainly encouraged to stop by the Holden Fine Arts building in room 2103, and you can sign that petition and get more information about what is on the petition and what it's all about. Just a little bit of information that's there. It talks about UW-Superior as a supportive, welcoming, and respectful campus for all students of religious, ethnic, and cultural backgrounds, gender identification, sexual orientations, and immigration statuses. And in light of the recent executive orders signed by the President of the United States that negatively target immigrant and international students, the students' ability to continue their educations in a secure environment. That is why this petition is going around the campus. If you want more information about it or if you want to sign that petition, you can go to the Holden Fine Arts building in room 2103 and get more information. Thank you.
Principal Fornese, Mr. Williams, members of the faculty and members of the student body of Barrett Junior High School, ladies and gentlemen. I need not pause to say how very delighted I am to be here today and to have the opportunity of taking a brief break in a pretty busy schedule in the city of Philadelphia to share with you the students of Barrett Junior High School. And I want to express my personal appreciation to the principal and the administration for inviting me and for giving me the opportunity to see this very fine and enthusiastic group of students here at Barrett. I guess I ought to start out with a commercial, and that is tonight we're going to have a great night in the city of Philadelphia at the Spectrum. Now, I know you've heard of that new impressive structure called the Spectrum. And I know you've heard of Harry Belafonte and Aretha Franklin and Nipsey Russell and Sidney Poitier and all of these other great and outstanding artists. Well, they're going to be here tonight at the Spectrum. And I hope that each of you will go home and tell your parents to be there tonight for this great Freedom Festival. And I hope you will come also, for it will be a great experience. And by coming, you will be supporting the work of the civil rights movement. Now that I've gotten the commercial out of the way, I'll move on and say some things that I want to say very briefly. And I'm being very honest, I'm going to be brief because I have other engagements. I don't have a tradition of being brief all the time. You know, I'm a Baptist preacher and we can talk a long time. But I'm going to really be brief today. I want to ask you a question, and that is, what is in your life's blueprint? This is the most important and crucial period of your lives, for what you do now and what you decide now at this age may well determine which way your life shall go. And whenever a building is constructed, you usually have an architect who draws a blueprint. And that blueprint serves as the pattern, as the guide, as the model for those who are to build the building. And a building is not well erected without a good, sound, and solid blueprint. Now, each of you is in the process of building the structure of your lives. And the question is whether you have a proper, a solid, and a sound blueprint. And I want to suggest some of the things that should be in your life's blueprint. Number one in your life's blueprint should be a deep belief in your own dignity, your own worth, and your own somebodiness. Don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody. Always feel that you count. Always feel that you have worth, and always feel that your life has ultimate significance. Now, that means that you should not be ashamed of your color. You know, it's very unfortunate that in so many instances, our society has placed a stigma on the Negro's color. You know, there are some Negroes who are ashamed of themselves. But don't be ashamed of your color. Don't be ashamed of your biological features. Somehow you must be able to say in your own lives and really believe it, I am black but beautiful. And believe it in your heart. And therefore, you need not be lured into purchasing cosmetics advertised to make you lighter. Neither do you need to process your hair to make it appear straight. I have good hair, and it is as good as anybody else's hair in the world. And we've got to believe that. Now, in your life's blueprint, be sure that you have that a principle of somebodiness. Secondly, in your life's blueprint, you must have as a basic principle the determination to achieve excellence in your various fields of endeavor. You're going to be deciding as the days and the years unfold what you will do in life, what your life's work will be. And once you discover what it will be, set out to do it, and to do it well. And I say to you, my young friends, that doors are opening to each of you. Doors of opportunity are opening to each of you that were not open to your mothers and to your fathers. And the great challenge facing you is to be ready to enter these doors as they open. Ralph Waldo Emerson, the great essayist, said in a lecture back in 1871 that if a man can write a better book or preach a better sermon or make a better mousetrap than his neighbor, even if he builds his house in the woods, the world will make a beaten path to his door. That hadn't always been true, but it will become increasingly true. And so I would urge you to study hard, to burn the midnight oil. I would say to you, don't drop out of school. And I understand all of the sociological reasons why we often drop out of school. But I urge you, in spite of your economic plight, in spite of the situation that you are forced to live so often with intolerable conditions, stay in school. And when you discover what you're going to be in life, set out to do it as if God Almighty called you at this particular moment in history to do it. Barber, a beautician, a good Negro skilled laborer. For if you set out to do that, you have already flunked your matriculation exam for entrance into the University of Integration. Set out to do a good job and do that job so well that the living, the dead, or the unborn couldn't do it any better. Falls your lot to be a street sweeper, sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, sweep streets like Beethoven composed music, sweep streets like Leontine Price sings before the Metropolitan Opera, and sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Sweep streets so well that all the host of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley. But be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. For it isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. We already have some noble examples of black men and black women who demonstrated to us that human nature cannot be cataloged. They in their own lives have walked through long and desolate nights of oppression, and yet they've risen up and plunged against cloud-filled nights of affliction, new and blazing stars of inspiration. And so from an old slave cabin of Virginia's hills, Booker T. Washington rose up to be one of America's great leaders. He lit a torch in Alabama, and darkness fled in that setting. Yes, you should know this because it's in your own city. from a poverty-stricken area of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Marian Anderson rose up to be the world's greatest contralto, so that a Toscanini could say that a voice like this comes only once in a century, and Sibelius of Finland could say, my roof is too low for such a voice, from the red hills of Gordon County, Georgia. And the arms of a mother who could neither read nor write, Roland Hayes, rose up to be one of the world's great singers and carried his melodious voice into the palaces and mansions of kings and queens. From crippling circumstances, there came a George Washington Carver to carve for himself an imperishable niche in the annals of science. There was a star in the diplomatic sky, and then came Ralph Bunce, the grandson of a slave preacher, and he reached up and grabbed it and allowed it to shine in his life with all of its scintillating beauty. There was a star in the athletic sky. And then came Jackie Robinson in his day and Willie Mays in his day with their powerful bats and their calm spirits. Then came Jesse Owens with his fleet and dashing feet. Then came Joe Louis and Muhammad Ali with their educated fists. All of them came to tell us that we can be somebody, and to justify the conviction of the poet, fleecy locks and black complexion cannot forfeit nature's claim. Skin may differ, but affection dwells in black and white the same. And if I were so tall as to reach the pole, or to grasp the ocean at a span, I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. And finally, finally, in your life's blueprint, must be a commitment to the eternal principles of beauty, love, and justice. Don't allow anybody to pull you so low as to make you hate them. Don't allow anybody to cause you to lose your self-respect to the point that you do not struggle for justice. However young you are, you have a responsibility to seek to make your nation a better nation in which to live. You have a responsibility to seek to make life better for everybody. And so you must be involved in the struggle for freedom and justice. Now, in this struggle for freedom and justice, there are many constructive things that we all can do and that we all must do. And we must not give ourselves to those things which will not solve our problems. You've heard the word nonviolent, and you've heard the word violent. I happen to believe in nonviolence. We struggle with this method with young people and adults alike all over the South, and we have won some significant victories, and we've got to struggle with it all over the North, because the problems are as serious in the North as they are in the South. But I believe as we struggle with these problems, we've got to struggle with them with a method that can be militant, but at the same time does not destroy life or property. And so our slogan must not be burn, baby, burn. It must be build, baby, build. Organize, baby, organize. Yes, our slogan must be, learn, baby, learn, so that we can earn, baby, earn. And with a powerful commitment, I believe that we can transform dark yesterdays of injustice into bright tomorrows of justice and humanity. Let us keep going toward the goal of selfhood, toward the realization of the dream of brotherhood, and toward the realization of the dream of understanding goodwill. Let nobody stop us. I close by quoting once more the man that the young lady quoted, that magnificent black bard who has now passed on, Langston Hughes. One day he wrote a poem entitled Mother to Son. The mother didn't always have her grammar right, but she uttered words of great symbolic profundity. Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it, boards torn up, places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you stop now. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find this kind of hard. But I's still going, boy. I's still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair. Well, life for none of us has been a crystal stair, but we must keep moving. We must keep going. If you can't fly, run. If you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl, but by all means, keep moving.
Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor, open the door and let them in. Oh, child, let those beautiful people in. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door. Someone's laying on the bell. Do me a favor, open the door and let them in. Child, let the soulful people in. Holly Williams was my twin. Elijah and Malcolm, still our friends. Brother Martin, we can't forget John. Bobby and Megan, Louis Armstrong. Lord, now y'all, let the folks in. They've been washed of their sins.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. When these rights are destroyed over long periods of time, it is your duty to destroy or abolish that government.
Holly Williams was my twin. I wanna see my twin. Let the folks in. We're gonna sit in my den.
But America is in a unique position. She's the only country in history in a position actually to become involved in a bloodless revolution. The only way we're gonna solve it, we gotta unite. We gotta work together in unity and harmony.
Still on friends, Brother Martin,
ringing the bell and kicking home. Do me a favor, open the door. Now let the folks in, let the folks in, let the folks in, let the folks in. Somebody better open the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Somebody better open the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor, do me a favor. Open up the door, open up the door. Let the sofa people in, let them stolen, let them stolen one at a time.
Be able to join hands.